Our scripture is out of Matthew chapter 5, verses 21 through 37. And we are continuing in our Sermon on the Mount series with this. You have heard that it was said to the people long ago, "You shall not murder. And anyone who murders will be subject to judgment. But I tell you that anyone who is angry with a brother or sister will be subject to judgment. Again, anyone who says to a brother or sister, 'Raca,' is answerable to the court." Now, raca, I should translate this for you right now, is like, it's an insult like calling them a fool, but it actually, in Hebrew or Aramaic, it actually comes back to the sound that one makes when one clears phlegm out of their throat and spits it. Okay? So anyone who says, "Wah!" is answerable to the court. And anyone who says, "You fool," will be in danger of the fire of hell. Therefore, if you are offering your gift at the altar, and there, remember that your brother or sister has something against you. Leave your gift there in the front of the altar. First go and be reconciled to them. Then come and offer your gift. Settle matters quickly with your adversary who is taking you to court. Do it while you are still together on the way, or your adversary may hand you over to the judge, and the judge may hand you over to the officer, and you may be thrown into prison. Truly, I tell you, you will not get out until you have paid the last penny. You have heard that it was said, "You shall not commit adultery." But I tell you that anyone who looks at a woman lustfully has already committed adultery with her in his heart. If your right eye causes you to stumble, gouge it out and throw it away. It is better for you to lose one part of your body than for your whole body to be thrown into hell. And if your right hand causes you to stumble, cut it off and throw it away. It is better for you to lose one part of your body than for your whole body to go into hell. It has been said, anyone who divorces his wife must give her a certificate of divorce. But I tell you, that anyone who divorces his wife except for sexual immorality makes her the victim of adultery, and anyone who marries a divorced woman commits adultery. Again, you have heard that it was said to the people long ago, "Do not break your oath, but fulfill to the Lord the vows you have made." But I tell you, do not swear an oath at all, either by heaven, for it is God's throne, or by earth, for it is his footstool, or by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king. And do not swear by your head, for you cannot even make one hair white or black. All you need to say is simply yes or no. Anything beyond that comes from the evil one. There's an awful lot there. And if I were going to preach for an hour, I might be able to get through all of it. But I'm not going to preach for an hour. We're going to talk about some of the common themes that we see throughout this passage. Last week, when we left off, we were talking about this idea of Jesus not coming to abolish the law, but to fulfill the law. And if you look in your bulletin, I thought, how do you say that properly? Fulfill. There's a pronunciation of fulfillment or fulfillment. And I think that, depending on who's actually saying it, is the case. Fulfillment. Got me actually thinking about cups. When is a cup full? When is a cup full? Now, I used to work at Perkins when I was saving money for an engagement ring for my wife. And Perkins is a lot like Sherry's, wonderful little bakery restaurant. And I would occasionally bring people out coffee. Say when. Say when. When. There were some people, the cup was not full until it was nearly overflowing. That drove me nuts. You know, because the last thing I wanted to do was spill coffee on them. Jesus is making a statement here when he talks about fulfillment. If we think about the law as this coffee cup with coffee going in, the Pharisees, the scribes, the leaders, they were happy with the cup that left a good inch and a half at the top. It's full enough. Jesus, his definition seemed to push beyond that to spilling over to the point where the coffee cup couldn't hold it all. So, what are the law and the prophets? Well, I have exaggerated multiple times about how many laws and rules there are. Traditionally, the Jewish rabbis say that there are 613 laws. And some of these laws are thou shalt not laws. Some of these are you shall laws. Some of them are only applicable in Jerusalem. When you're here, you should do this. Oh, okay. And some of these are laws that we scratch our head with today. Rules like, when you make your garment, do not blend different types of fabric together. I don't know about you, but I know for sure I'm at least wearing two cotton poly blends today. When you build your house, build a parapet, a wall around your roof. A wall around your roof. Huh. Can't say I see many of those, right? We put gutters around our roofs, but that's to catch the water that drips off. There were reasons for some of these laws that were just a little, well, if you think about it, they filed under a few different purposes, okay? Don't commit adultery, don't commit murder, okay? Those damage relationships badly, right? I mean, if you commit adultery, your spouse is going to have an issue with this. And if they're married, their spouse is going to have an issue with it. Bad relationships. It's a good idea not to do that. Don't murder. Yeah, that's pretty obvious. I don't have to explain that. Love the Lord your God. That's one of the you shalls. With all your heart and soul and strength. Again, love God. That's important. Love your neighbor as yourself. That's important. Cotton poly blends. Well, if you go back in that time, they were not mixing cotton and poly. They might be mixing linen and wool. But here's the problem. Different natural fibers react differently to washing. And if you patch together the three, four different types of fabric and you wash it, when it dries, it's going to react by tearing the garment. The stitching won't stay together because one is going to expand more, one is going to shrink more, and it's going to put a tension in there and rip it. Parapet around the roof, I've explained that before. They had flat roofs in those days that they would go out to rest and enjoy the cool breeze in the evening. You do not want people falling off your roof. That's not conducive to good relationships, health, and safety. Don't eat pigs. Well, pigs were massive carriers of trichinosis. They still are. But hey, we have these wonderful thermostats. We can shove in that chunk of meat and cook it to the right temp. Not as big of a deal today. Jesus, though, comes along and he says, the law and the prophets have to be fulfilled in me, not abolished. And so we have going on in Matthew 5 and into 6 what I call the you have heard but I says. Jesus is reinterpreting the law for everyone to understand it more clearly, better. And why is he doing this? Why does he need to do this? Well, because essentially the leaders of the day had become experts at splitting hairs. Technically, it says this, for example, in the case of divorce. If you want to divorce her, you need to give her a certificate of divorce. That way, everyone will know that she is legally divorced from you. And that way, if she begs, it won't look bad upon you. It will just be her. Because you've legally divorced her. You're no longer responsible for her. And the assumption in that time, what is it, was her fault. Splitting hairs. And Jesus is saying, we can obey the letter of the law and still not fulfill the spirit of it. Right? Speed limits. We have drivers in this room. You know what? I don't know if the rule is here in Oregon, but I knew in Wyoming, if you did not go 6 miles an hour over the speed limit, if you stayed under that 6 mile mark, you were safe. So if the speed limit was 75, as long as you didn't go faster than 80, you were fine. Now we have a letter of the law, we have an unspoken letter of the law, and then there's the spirit of the law, which is drive at a safe speed. And in wintertime out there, 80 is not safe, 70 is not safe, sometimes 45 is not safe. So back to Jesus. Jesus is saying that fulfilling the law goes beyond following the letter of the law, splitting the hairs, getting it precise. I'm actually reminded, one of the finest moments in splitting hairs in history that I can recall is way back in the 90s. You remember the previous president to be impeached? And they asked him a question. And he says, well, that all depends on what the definition of is, is. And this logic, that mentality, it was the mentality that the Pharisees, the scribes were using to determine right and wrong. So Jesus then, talking about anger and murder, says, you've heard it said, don't murder, right? Murder is bad. But Jesus says, don't get angry to the point of being willing to murder someone or even thinking about it. I mean, we've all been angry at some point in time, furiously angry, almost to the point of being ready to strangle them. And sometimes it's parents dealing with babies that won't stop crying, and that's frustration moving you to that point. Sometimes it's with people who have cheated you in your life. We get angry, but at least you didn't kill them, right? But Jesus is saying here, yeah, if you've already committed the murder in your mind, you're guilty. And then he says, hey, just to be clear though, even if you've got something against somebody else here, that you're angry with a brother or sister in Christ, if you go to give your offering, which we already took, but you still have anger against them in your heart, you need to go and reconcile with them before your offering could be honored. I'm going to let a little silence happen here so you can ponder how that applies to you. Reconciliation is fulfillment of the law. And then he goes on to say, reconcile with everyone before you get to court. Because if you get to court, all bets are off. You might lose. And I'm struck by how this metaphor of reconciling might even apply to our own relationship with God and with Jesus, right? That's a court I do not want to get to unreconciled. And then he says, lust and adultery. You've heard it said, don't commit adultery. But I say, if you look at a woman lustfully, you've already committed adultery in your mind. Now, this is not noticing that a woman is beautiful. I do want to be clear on that. You can notice somebody as pretty or handsome without it being adultery. It's where your mind goes after that that's important. And the best part of this is, Jesus says to these men, better that you cut your eye out and lose that if it causes you to sin than to lose your whole body for committing adultery. Notice he doesn't say, and ladies, make sure you dress appropriately. This is a really critical thing here. So we have this culture where we often do victim blaming, you know, well, what were you wearing? You know, and these conversations come up. Jesus has taken the fire right to the problem, and he's saying, better you cut your eye out or cut your hand off than you do this. It's not just about what you do, though. It's what you think. The deeper part, what's going on in your soul. And then he talks about divorce and adultery, and he says, listen, you've heard it said, just give her a certificate of divorce. And literally, the man could write down, I divorce you, have it witnessed, boom, done. She had nothing to say about this. And Jesus is saying, no. Cup is still half full. To fulfill the law, you take care of your relationships. And then in the section on oaths and swearing, Jesus says, you've heard it said, you know, don't swear falsely. Don't swear an oath that you're not going to hear to. Now, this is not swearing as in profanity, okay? Let's be clear. This is not talking about profanity here. This is talking about, I swear on a stack of Bibles. We've heard this before, right? Maybe some of us have used this statement. Why do we talk about swearing on a stack of Bibles? Because we consider these Bibles something holy. And if you swear on something holy, you will not violate that oath, right? And so in Jesus' day and time, you were taught that. If you were going to swear, make sure you swear on the appropriate level of thing to swear on. Right? If it's an oath you might break easily, swear it upon the hair on your head, which you can't even change the color from white to black or black to white, because that's not that big of a deal. Hairs are these tiny little things. But to swear on Jerusalem, well, that's God's holy city. That's a big deal. And so they were taught to swear appropriately. And Jesus is saying here, listen, if you go into swearing an oath, trying to make room to wiggle out of it, you've already violated the integrity of the oath. Right? This is great. People will ask you to do things like, Pastor, will you take care of this for me? You know what? I'll get to it as soon as I can. Right? What am I doing when I say that? I am leaving myself a little wiggle room. I'm leaving myself excuse room. Better I say, no, I can't do that. Or I can't promise to get to that in a specific amount of time than to say, yeah, I'll get to it eventually. And Jesus actually expands on this idea later, and he talks about these two boys and their dad. And the dad goes to the first and says, son, will you do this? And the son says, no way, dad. And he goes away. And so the dad goes to the second son and says, son, will you do this? The son says, sure, dad. And then the second son doesn't do it. And the first son later says, you know what? I was wrong. I'm going to take care of it. And he just does it. And Jesus says, which one of these did the father's will? Well, the first one, even though he said no. There is an integrity to our word that Jesus is pushing us to own. There is an integrity to our sexuality that Jesus is pushing us to own. There is an integrity to our character that God is desiring out of all of us. Let your yes be yes, your no be no. Do not sin by blank. It is as if we look at this as a Venn diagram, that the law falls within the Jesus Creed. I mean, you can go through the law piece by piece, step by step, and you can see where it falls within love God and love others. Love God, love others. And the reality when I preach a message like this, where I talk about looking at others with lust, where I talk about divorce, where I talk about anger, there's not a person in this room who could say, phew, I'm free of all those, right? I mean, certainly ain't the guy up front. And my wager is if you're sitting on something blue, it's not you too. We all sin. And Jesus finished the previous section by saying, unless you surpass the Pharisees and the scribes in their obedience to the law, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven. And the reality is, it's really hard to do that. And Jesus calls us to be perfect, and we can't. So does that mean there's no hope? By no means. The law is impossible to follow. It's impossible. Linda, you're a kindergarten teacher. One of the things that I learned as I was going through some coursework was that small children don't have the ability to remember more than, what, 2, 3, 4 rules at most, if you're lucky, right? Guess what? It doesn't get that much better when you get older. 613. And Jesus is saying, later he says, what is the greatest commandment? This is what I tell you. The greatest commandment is to love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and strength. And number two, to love your neighbor as yourself. All of the law, that little bitty red circle is encapsulated in that great, big, huge love your neighbor and love God. What I love about Venn diagrams, and I did this specifically with this one, is the law is so tiny in comparison that when we think about love God, love others, that encompasses so many other things, right? And I will tell you, as we look around this congregation, we see these empty seats today. The evangelical churches in America have done a great job of naming sin, proclaiming it, this is this, and God is going to judge you for it. And yet, when it comes down to it, their view is that red dot. And Jesus is saying there's much more to this. than just the red dot. When we switch to moving to the simple principles of loving each other and loving God, we don't have to worry about the details in that red zone. It gets covered. Now, my thought is, you know, the law is not abolished. It's still important. But God's grace, God's mercy forgives us. We arbitrate that with God. I don't arbitrate Faye's sin before God or Sue's sin before God. No, that's between her and God. That's my sins between me and God. If I see a brother sinning and I go and I love them and I care about them and I talk to them, I can help them. But in my experience, they can't experience a correction as love until they believe we actually love them. Right? Don, I've seen you womanizing. I love this. So, Don, I've seen you womanizing. You need to come to Jesus because you're going to go to hell if you don't fix this. Now, if Don sees me only as this person who's coming up and calling him out, he's going to go, pfft. But if Don knows that I love him and I care about him and I say, Don, I'm worried. I've noticed you've been hanging around with these other women that are not your wife. I'm concerned. Now he's hearing it come in a different way. I think, and this is one of those I think moments, this is Jeff speaking, not God speaking. I think if we spent our energy focusing first and foremost on loving God and loving others and got to a good place of mastery there, all the rest of our witness, not a problem. When the world believes we love them, they respond. When people believe they are loved, they hear. That doesn't mean we never argue, right? I mean, you can love your spouse dearly and still argue because you're two people and you both think and you have disagreements. But if we are going to fulfill this, we've got to let go of the individual items in the law to start thinking broader. How do we love God? How do we love other people? And how do we do it fully? Because here's the thing. It's that same principle that God uses to give you the grace for every offense you make. It's loving you more than prioritizing, oh man, you did this wrong, you did this wrong, you did this wrong, you did this wrong. That's what the cross was all about. Was saying, I love you so much that I let you pin me to a tree and kill me. And that's the love that we're called to live. Will you pray with me? Gracious God, we need to learn how to love better, to love ourselves, to love each other,